Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I normally interview film industry professionals on this show. Well, today I'm mixing up the format a bit to talk about films of 2012 and what we can look forward to in 2013 with my friend Cinema Dave Montalbano, who will be joining us shortly. He's a film critic and also author of Adventures of Cinema Dave in the Florida Motion Picture World, which I have had a chance to read, and it's quite an epic novel. It's more like a doorstop. It's huge. It's a huge book that he wrote, and I did have a chance to interview him about the book, so you can go back and listen to that interview anytime you like, along with all of the archives. This show has now been here on the radio, on live on the internet, I should say, for a year. In fact, this basically makes my anniversary episode. So I encourage people to go back and listen to any shows that they have missed in the past, because I've interviewed some great people throughout the year, including Dean Lyon, visual effects for actually Infidel, the movie I just saw last night. He did some visual effects on that, but he's also done big mainstream productions like Lord of the Rings. So he has done a wide range of films. He's tried to get more into the local market and really promote South Florida, which we all appreciate here in South Florida. And speaking of Infidel, it's a movie I watched last night, directed by George Montero and produced by Rose Warner. It was shown at the Crest Theater in Del Rey last night. And hopefully they will have more screenings of it. It was a private screening, but they will have more. You'll see that more in the film festival circuit, I'm sure. So keep an eye out for Infidel. It's a short film, 30 minutes, and it talks about the importance of faith and basically starts off with a man shooting a gun in a church. And what decision will you make? Will you choose your faith or will you choose your life? And it's a really interesting film for anyone that is into faith-based movies. And also for those that are not, it definitely leaves you thinking. And I think that's what it's all about. And I had a chance to interview producer Rose Warner last week. So if you missed that interview, go back and take a listen. But right now I do have my friend Dave Montalbano, I believe, on the line. Let me just check here. Dave, are you there?
Here I is.
There you are. Well, you know what? I'm going to dive right in. Let's talk about films from 2012. There's a lot of great films, and I know you have kind of a top 10 list of some of your favorites. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that. I'll give you the floor.
Great. Well, as you know, I don't make my final decision on that until December 31st. One of the reasons why is I'm still reviewing movies from 2012. Matter of fact, I'm in the process right now watching that
Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, they're both in it. So we got a double dose of Kristens in that movie.
Which film is this? On the Road.
On the Road. It's based on the Jack Kerouac novel. It's required reading for many, many schools. And I was talking to Jan Mitchell and Associates about trying to get this into schools, and we realized because of the R rating, the language, and graphic nudity, that it probably wouldn't pass by the school board. So we're trying to find alternative methods for students to go see this movie. So we're looking into things with that right now. And also I'm in the process right now reviewing Moonrise Kingdom. It's that Wes Anderson film that stars Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, Tilda Swinton, Bob Balaban, Jason Schwartzman. It got tremendous reviews over the summer, but of course it came out against Prometheus and Snow White and the Huntsman, so it was kind of like that small independent movie that disappeared that's making a comeback of DVD, so I'm in the process of doing that, because then I will have a final top 10 list by December 31st. But of course I've got other titles.
Maybe you can clue us into a few of your favorites from the year.
One horror movie that's been my favorite, and I think it's probably going to win the Rondo Hatton Award this year, and that would be Cabin in the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great horror movie because it fulfills every It covers every genre in the horror movie. Starts off like a 1970s slasher movie on the premise. These four high school kids get together to go to a cabin in the woods, and they're told they're doomed. And you think you're watching Friday the 13th, part 75, over again. But then there's some twist to it. And then the man who was the Palm Beach Film Festival's Man of the Year 2 years ago, Richard Dent, shows up. And he's working in a lab. And you start realizing that these four kids that went to the cabin in the woods are being manipulated by the corporate man. And I don't want to give too much away, but it fulfills, for 90 minutes, it's a great horror movie. It's done by Josh Whedon, I believe, who created Buffy
right.
the Vampire. And it's Vampire a must-see
Slayer.
Movie. You know.
Right.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I said.
Yeah. And it's really a must-see movie, and it provides everything that a horror movie is supposed to have, and it follows all the genres of it, but then it just takes you off beat. And one of the funniest reviews, somebody wrote, Josh Whedon said, so when we're going to see the sequel, and Josh Whedon said, did you see the end of the movie? That's all I can say about it. If you're a horror movie fan, definitely, I feel pretty safe for saying Cabin in the Woods will probably be in the top 10 list this year.
And that was Richard Jenkins that was in that.
Richard Jenkins, thank you, thank you, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great. He is just great in that movie. He's got both nerdy, he's both a nerd, and he's got swarmy charm in that movie. It's just a lot of fun. And
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to also add Marvel's The Avengers. It's the number one box office movie of the year and a crowd pleaser. And it's probably the only movie I've heard about in the last 7 or 8 years that people want to go see it three times over opening day weekend.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely, I would say, my favorite film of the year was Avengers. And I didn't get a chance to see a lot of movies this year, actually, but it definitely put a smile on my face. And I was anticipating it for such a long time. I'm a big fan of superhero movies, comic book characters, so... definitely was a great film, had that sense of humor, action, everything you'd possibly want, the good character development, everything.
And what I liked about it was it lived up to the hype.
Mm-hmm.
When they started it, I mean, the first tease for the Avengers movie was the teaser at the end of Iron Man 4 years ago. And if you stayed past the credits, they mentioned the Avengers. Well, Samuel Jackson,
right.
for the first time, played Sergeant Fury. And came out and said, hey, listen, you know, I want Tony Stark to join the Avengers initiative. Four years later, Captain America is introduced, Thor is introduced, Tony Stark makes Iron Man 2. And this film, The Avengers, lived up to all the hype for it. And, you know, I just admire people rising to the occasion. And, you know, the producer, Marvel, really did. And so they need to be congratulated for that.
There's a lot of movies that got a lot of hype this year, like Hunger Games. That was one. Tell us a little bit about Hunger Games.
Hunger Games I liked. I know people who really worship the books were disappointed in it, but Jennifer Lawrence is, right now she can do no wrong in the movies. She was in Winter Bone, where she was nominated for an Oscar. She's Katniss in Hunger Games, and she and Josh Hutcherson, who I think is a fantastic young actor, really pull it off in tough cartoon roles, but you end up rooting for them beyond the cartoonish roles on it. And they did a very good job taking Suzanne Collins' novel and really adapting it to its own world, its own sense of community. If, you know, old-timers might remember the TV show The Prisoner with Patrick McGoohan, they captured some of that old TV flair of the media event, but also just some brutal action sequences that made you realize that, oh, this is not all fun and games. These young kids are fighting for survival. And they did a really, I was really impressed with pulling that off. Even though I had listened to the book on audiobook, I was riveted by that film. So that's a possible top 10 list for me. I'm not quite sure if it's that or honorable mention right now.
Okay. And I know that you know all about the hype around Skyfall, and you went to a special premiere. Tell us about that.
Well, the that turned out to be the last IMAX movie that I got to see this year. For some reason, I've not been able to see Hobbit this year, so guess what? Hobbit might not make my top 10 list this year. But Skyfall was phenomenal because it featured, Casino Royale 6 years ago introduced Daniel Craig as James Bond, but it also took James Bond back into the direction of Ian Fleming's original adaptation of James Bond, that he was a tough soldier, he gets into trouble, he's not as smooth as he should be, and what they did is in Skyfall is live up to that, where they focused on developing the character from Casino Royale to now. And with Skyfall also, though, it had a lot of details that made the people that have been following the franchise for 50 years really embrace. There's a great use of the Aston Martin that got applause. At one point, almost a standing ovation just by this car being driven around a parking lot. There's some great sequences with timing the James Bond theme at the exact moment to make it worthwhile. But it was also very modern. The director of the movie is Sam Mendes, and he took and he won the Oscar for American Beauty, and also Paul Newman's last performance in The Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks. And by the way, Daniel Craig as a snotty son of Paul Newman in that movie. But he basically crafted a very good spy thriller that was based on character development and motivation. And also they had some spectacular action sequences in it that you would expect from a James Bond movie. And the last
James Bond film.
Right, which is...
The crazy editing of the last film, I thought was the Quantum of Solace was just... The editing just made you dizzy.
Yeah, that's what I call the attention deficit disorder editing or ADD editing, when I wrote the review for that, I said, come on, you're James Bond. Quit acting like your Jason Bourne imitation. And I guess the producers heard me, so they actually crafted better action sequences with this. You know, I think
yes,
the producers
I'm sure
read The Observer.
I'm sure it's because of Cinema Dave's commentary that they changed around the James Bond film.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get a royalty check from MGM someday. But that just might make my top 10 list this year. You know, there's a lot of those.
And, of course, we have the Twilight, the ending of the Twilight. Of course, they're making another movie, but it's for video game, I believe, the video game audience. But it's the ending of the Twilight, finally. What did you think about the last film in the Twilight saga there?
It's over, right? What a relief. I mean, I didn't go. I mean, you know, I'm facing that stage of my life where I'm not going to be interested in everything a teenager is interested in, and so I didn't even review the first Twilight movie, but I went to see the second one when the first one came out on DVD. So I had like a whole weekend of it, and I remember writing to my readers saying, "Please, I don't want to write any more reviews for this. It's good for what it is. It's teen angst. I wish they'd focus more on vampires and fighting than." Talking about existential philosophy, at which point the third movie came out on IMAX, and I had to review it. And I will say this much about the series. Each film did improve upon the previous one, and I will give them credit for the last one for throwing in a sequence to actually make it a good curtain call for them. I just wonder, again, with all these, I think within 4 years, though, you went through a whole cycle of sixth grade girls that were really excited about, you know, seeing Robert Pattinson. And then 4 years later, now that they're getting driver's license going, he's not as cute as I thought he was 4 years ago. Or, you know, Kristen Dunst, Stewart, you know, just really not emoting beyond what she could do on that movie. You just realize that she was as cold hearted as a vampire. And, it'll be interesting, like, what kind of retrospect 20 years from now they have with that. Will they think of fondness with Twilight as they did Star Wars or James Bond? Time will tell.
I would think not.
But, you know, Stephanie Meyer's book, The Host, was the bestseller after the Twilight saga. That movie's coming out around May or so stay tuned. So.
Oh, okay. Are there any films out in theaters now that are from 2012 but they're still in theaters that you think people should go take a look at?
Well, for entertainment purposes, I will say Parental Guidance is, on one hand, a typical Billy Crystal movie. But on the other hand, it's a film that you can bring anyone to. You can bring grandma. You can bring your kids. It's like an Everyone Loves Raymond comedy where it's very approachable. You'll see old generations, and it presents both sides of family today. Most of the movies I see out there right now, I feel a sense that I've seen the best movies out there already. Again, I don't want to diss The Hobbit because I've not been able to see that.
And you haven't been able to see Les Mis as well?
No. If I could swing it in, I might swing it tonight. Like I said, a critic's job is never done. But Les Mis, I definitely want to see. Also, Life of Pi, that's a strong candidate for my top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked about that movie, slightly long, I would not recommend seeing that at night. But there's some great, because it starts off a little bit slow. And I'm sure you've seen the TV commercials where it basically deals with the young man on the boat with the tiger and trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good old-fashioned storytelling. And the visuals, once the ship sinks and the teenager stuck on the boat with the tiger, I was amazed at how fresh and how entertaining and the variety of sequences that came up to keep you interested and riveting in those sequences. It was kind of like with the movie Apollo 13. You knew what was going to happen. You knew the astronauts were going to get home alive based on, you know, your knowledge of history, but you're still sitting on the edge of your seat with that. And then with Life of Pi, they then went into a direction where talking about celestial beings or, you know, talking about philosophical matters in very few words. One of the things that really makes me groan with the Twilight series was you had these teenage actors talking about, you know, these great in-depth philosophical discussions as if they were Harvard and Yale professors. And basically, the actors had no idea what they were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And so, in very few words, the narrator of Life of Pi says very deep, important philosophical meanings. And it's a fantastic film. And the ending is a tricky ending. You really will walk out of the movie wanting to talk about it.
Hmm. Now, you said don't see this at night. What does that mean?
Well, that and Lincoln are two very, very good movies, very dramatic. The only drawback is you're not going to have the Marvel adventure action sequences to, like, wake you up for the grand finale or the shootouts in Skyfall. In some cases, you do get your fill of action sequences, but the most important parts of that movie is the dialogue at the end and what the meaning of the words are and what actions we know will happen. And that's why I always recommend, because in some cases people say, oh, that's too long, and then they miss the most important sequences or the whole poor, you know, meaning of the film. You know, it's like some people with Sixth Sense, they don't understand the ending until they go see it again. Nothing said, a ring drops, but you're never sure what happens. And both films have that kind of ending where it's a very detailed scene that you'll go, oops, if you yawned or something like that, you'll miss it. And it really pays off if you're awake.
What were the most disappointing films this year? Did you have some that you were really waiting for and then you got there and you're like, wah, wah?
You know, too many to say. I mean, truly, there's just too many to say. And tell you the truth, one of the things with my column is, you know, and we've talked about this, where I know how independent filmmakers suffer. You know, I truly know. So I really try not to give a bad review. I'll warn people if it's really, really that bad. Like, you know, for example, if you're watching Parental Guidance, and at the end of it, Billy Madison takes a machine gun and kills Billy Crystal at the end of it, I would feel an obligation to my readers to kind of warn them, like, this would not be your Christmas movie to go see.
That did not happen in Parental Guidance.
That's true. It's again, the family movie this week. Okay, the family movie to go see this week. But I guess in some cases, I mean, I even liked, I'm blanking on the movie, The Big Bomb, the John Carter.
Uh-huh.
That came out in March. I actually liked that movie. The biggest problem, and it's one of the biggest box office losses of this year, maybe of all time. It's up there with Cleopatra. It's that bad. But the thing about it was...
I like Cleopatra.
Yeah, the Elizabeth Taylor movie?
Yeah, I love Cleopatra.
Well, then, good. John Carter will be the Cleopatra of the current generation, then.
I didn't get a chance to see it, but...
Yeah, with time, I mean, the sad thing about John Carter was it's based on novels written by Edgar Rice Burroughs. So it took forever to get this movie on the screen. Disney produced it, and they really tried. They really tried, but it just didn't work. And I think one of the reasons why is because we've seen it all before with the Star Wars movies. And why did we see this all before in the Star Wars movies? Because George Lucas was inspired by Edgar Rice Burroughs. So basically, George Lucas took Edgar Rice Burroughs' John Carter, changed the names around, and made Star Wars episodes 1-6. And it's funny because the last two Marches, you had Mars Needs Moms, and then you had John Carter of Mars, and they were two big box office disappointments for Disney. Well,
yeah.
It's funny that, you know, Disney's had a hard time with science fiction for 30 years, that they turn around and buy out George Star Wars from George Lucas and say, okay, now we got a franchise. So.
Were there any films this year that were kind of the opposite, that you had really low expectations for and then they surprised you?
I'm going to confess this now. When I cover film festivals, every time I go into those films, I go with low expectations, just because I've been to enough of them where, you know, you see the mom before the beginning on the curtain on the red carpet, and then you realize mom's in every sequence of the movie that we're watching. It's like, oh God, please, you know, don't let them see me leave. I was impressed with Palm Beach Film Festival opening with Robot and Frank.
Oh yeah, what a great movie that was.
Yeah, and Frank Langella.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of like somebody's trying to get Frank Langella nominated for an Oscar for that, because he should be, because he should. The transitions in his performance are phenomenal. The great cast, great simple story. You know, it's science fiction that could be reality 5 years from now with robots and the aged and elderly. But just a great movie that worked on so many different levels that still surprised me and tricked me. Dark Amazon came out the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival this year, and they did a phenomenal job. With that movie, the director of that, who won the short subject the previous year at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, within a year produced, wrote, and directed Dark Amazon, which basically she wants to make this documentary about pharmaceuticals and tearing down the rainforest. And just like a spur of the moment, she put together the script for Dark Amazon, which is basically about a bunch of reality TV producers going down the Amazon and not respecting the spirits of the Amazon. Of course, the spirits get angry and go after them. And it's, on one hand, it's got that, it takes advantage of the Blair Witch kind of filming, but on the same token, they don't go through the attention deficit disorder editing, so that when the sequences happen, it's not bloody. It's not, you know, limbs floating around or anything like that, or guts blowing up into the camera, but it's just eerie enough to make you feel lost in the Amazon. So those were two films, again, low expectations with the Palm Beach Film Festival and the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, but man alive, they held my interest. They both held my interest.
Yeah, and Oscars are right around the corner, and I'll tell you what, seeing John Hawkes in The Sessions, I hope that he gets nominated for an award. We saw that at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. What a great movie that was as well. And he's also was in The Playroom. It was The Playroom. At the film festival, too, and just a great actor.
Well, I've been following his career since The Perfect Storm with George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg and Diane Lane. And Diane Lane and Mark Wahlberg are the pretty boy, pretty actress, you know, you're supposed to, they're supposed to be the ones that you feel, you know, the romantic encounter with. But John Hawks, my introduction to John Hawks was in that movie with Rusty Schwimmer. And John Hawks is just, he looks older, by the way, in that movie. I think in Sessions he looks younger in that movie than he does in Perfect Storm, which came out 12 years ago. But in Perfect Storm, John Hawks romances, skinny John Hawks romances big Rusty Schwimmer. Rusty Schwimmer is a big character actress. She's been in tons of movies as the aggressive fat lady. Red hair. You know her when you see her. Matter of fact, in Perfect Storm, when she shows up, every time I've seen that with the crowd, they just roar with, oh, my God, look how big and ugly this woman is. Yet, Rusty Schwimmer.
That's really nice.
Well, I'll tell you, though, Rusty Schwimmer.
That's a great description.
Well, Rusty Schwimmer, and she's also a friend of my buddy, Ward Donahoe. Rusty Schwimmer.
I'm hoping she's not listening right now.
Actually, I'm hoping she does, because here comes a big compliment right now. Because Rusty Schwimmer and John Hawks then break your heart by that movie. Especially at one point she shows up in the movie and she turns him down and he keeps hitting on her. And then finally the next morning when he's getting ready to ship off, she shows up and puts on her best makeup. And it breaks your heart because you know he's not coming back from the perfect storm. And the two of them, I hope they make movies together again. They were just phenomenal team together, and I'd love to see that again, because they literally, if you watch Perfect Storm again, you're more hurt with their plight than they are Mark Wahlberg and Diane Lane's plight. And like I said, Rusty Schwimmer's made a career playing those kind of roles, but this movie, it was like she sunk her teeth in it. It really breaks your heart in that movie, and I hope she is listening, because I want to meet her someday and just tell her what a phenomenal job she did with that movie.
What do you think about for the Oscars? Do you have any ideas of who might get nominated this year?
Hard to say anymore. It's almost funny because of, like, Golden Globes, they announced the day after Golden Globes, they're going to nominate the they're going to announce some Oscar nominees.
The 10th of January.
Right, and I think Golden Globes are the 9th, so we're both going to be writing a lot of stuff real fast in 24 hours during, you know, for our respective columns that week. I'm not getting a feeling yet with things. I know there's, like, there's a history of Golden Globes nominating, falling in love with movies that never get nominated for an Oscar. So I'm just not quite certain. Also, down here in South Florida, we're not getting some of the Oscar movies yet, like Zero Dark Thirty. Or actually pronounced O Dark 30. That's the movie about the Osama bin Laden, capturing Osama bin Laden, or shooting Osama bin Laden. We've not seen that down here in South Florida, but that has made everyone's top 10 list. And I understand Jessica Chastain, who I think is a marvelous actress from, for example, she was a ditzy housewife in The Help, the same year that she played young Helen Mirren in The Debt. Two totally polar opposite roles. And she plays the lead, the female that locates Osama bin Laden. And already there's a lot of Oscar buzz about her performance in that. And so we'll see what happens with that.
A lot of people are putting Les Mis in that category. I know you haven't seen it yet. And Argo has gotten a lot of buzz, too. And even Silver Linings Playbook, which was shown here at the film festival, and I was kicking myself because I wasn't able to see it, but it looks fantastic. And that also has made some people's top 10 lists, along with Lincoln and, like you said, Zero Dark Thirty. Life of Pi has, you know, been mentioned, so... it'll be interesting to see who gets in there.
Again,
I'm kind of hoping for Les Mis, even though I haven't seen it yet. I know it's going to be fantastic. I'm going to see it hopefully soon.
And I think, you know, this is, Anne Hathaway will probably be nominated for Best Supporting Actress because she seems to have that kind of buzz going for her right now. And also it helps that, you know, she was in Dark Knight Rises this year as Catwoman. So she'll, you know, she'll make that transition. It's a good year for her to do, and she seems to be well-liked by the industry. So,
Of course, we have to mention Dark Knight Rises, and you had a moment where you saw the film and you saw a moment of silence. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, literally on Thursday night, I went to bed, and then as my morning ritual on Fridays, I'll roll out of bed, come over here and see my parents. And Mom said, "Did you hear about the shooting?" And then sure enough, it was actually your home state, Colorado. And right off the bat, they were like already on the news talking about not having screenings that day. You know, it was it going to be an insurgency? Was it just a lone gunman? You know, they just, you know, didn't quite know. And I thought, well, you know, Museum of Discovery, IMAX Theater down in Fort Lauderdale, they've always been a very classy organization. So I said, you know, if worse comes worse as a newsman, I'll always have a news story. So I went down there. And again, they were phenomenal. You saw closed policemen everywhere. And Marlene actually hosted the first showing that day after the shooting. It was a 150 show. And she acknowledged that, yes, you've seen the police. Yes, we have plainclothesmen here. And so I just want to let you know you're all going to be safe, that nothing's going to happen. And then she says, but just to honor what the sad news that we just had a moment of silence. And it was great. We all kind of like, it just kind of like took the edge off a lot of things. It also let us like just acknowledge what was going on, but also go into the profound reason why we go to movies. Especially a movie like Dark Knight Rises, where you want escapism. You want to get escape from your problems. And to me, Dark Knight Rises lived up to that occasion. I know it hasn't been as well reviewed as the previous Dark Knight movie. But I got to admit, you know, people were cheering in their chairs. They were throwing their fists up in the air as the film progressed, especially when Batman started taking command of the situation the last third of the movie. And, you know, again, after having that moment of silence, I think we could all enjoy that movie guilt-free. And that was a very, very profound moment for me this year, because it kind of put in perspective movies and the importance of it, why we all need that escapism.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of movies are you looking forward to in 2013? Any titles that you are looking forward to seeing?
Well, it's funny. I read a column yesterday where we were talking about, if you look at a lot of movies, there's so many sequels right now. We're up to movies with the number 5 in them right now, like Scary Movie 5, Die Hard 5,
right.
You know. And the one that tops that is Fast and Furious Part 6. And we also have Iron Man 3 coming out. One movie I've been hearing a lot of buzz of, and I've gotten basically through our Spooky Empire connections, is Robert Zombie's Lords of Salem. Robert Zombie makes either good movies or bad movies, but they're always interesting movies. And Lords of Salem was filmed in Salem, Massachusetts, where I visited frequently. My sister lives up in Marblehead, and that's Rob Zombie's hometown. And he's got an ensemble cast from like Sid Haig to his wife is going to be in it, Sherry Moon Zombie. Great ensemble cast in those movies. And they say this movie is unlike the flash violence of The Devil's Rejects or Halloween. This one is more like a Roman Polanski vein, where he takes his time building up to a crescendo of horror.
And what's it called?
Lords of Salem. Lords of Salem. That comes out around April or so. And then May looks like your traditional summer movie. You've got Iron Man 3. The Great Gatsby is being released. It was supposed to be released at Christmas this year, and they're releasing that in May, which makes me wonder, you know, what that is.
I'm not looking forward to seeing that one, I have to say that. But I'm just not a fan of that director, so, and a lot of people are, so I'm sure a lot of people will flock to that. But I'm much more into traditional historical filming when it comes to something like that, especially because I love the book Great Gatsby. And so I was really upset to see that trailer.
I know. You know,
I'm sure a lot of people will love it.
You know, it's like one of those things, I don't want to pay to see it, so, you know, if I miss the screening, no big deal, I'll catch it, you know, someday when it's on TV 400 times a day. I'm really not that sucked. Also in May, Star Trek Into Darkness comes out.
Yeah.
That's the reboot franchise. And a lot of buzz about this one because it's now truly Josh Whedon and his new cast taking over the generation, you know, what's happening after Captain Kirk, or even though Chris Pine is Captain Kirk, Chris Pine is no longer William Shatner, he's now Captain Kirk. And so that's going to be fascinating, but I'm hearing some good word of mouth about that. And just as a side note,
that's J.J. Abrams actually directed.
Abrams, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Bad boy. But thank you for catching that. You know those young whippersnappers under 30. You know, I get their names mixed up.
We're running out of time, but I just wanted to mention real quick. There was a lot of people that we lost this year, a lot of stars that we lost. Was there any that really tugged at your heartstrings? For me, of course, it was Ernest Borgnine, my buddy Ernest, who I met back in Los Angeles, and he was here in South Florida, and I wasn't able to see him, but I left him a little note, which you passed on to him, and evidently he remembered me, and that had been years ago. So was there anyone that really makes you sad that is gone this year?
Michael Clark Duncan, that big guy from the Green Mile, just a really lovable guy. And even when he played, he's like Lon Chaney Jr., even when he played bad guys, you still wanted to root for him. And he was supposed to be, this comes out in October, Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. His character, Minute, had some really great big scenes coming up. But since Michael's not going to be back in that film, Dennis Haysbert is going to be playing Michael's character in it. And you met him.
What a great guy he is. He's such a great guy.
So yeah, at least the torch is being passed from one to another like that. But I really liked him a lot. We both have fond memories of Celeste Holm
right. That was this year too. Celeste was this year.
She passed away within a week of Ernest Borgnine.
I guess yeah, you're right. I forgot it was this year. Yeah.
So
nice.
I always remember you getting angry with me because when her husband started singing "Some Enchanted Evening," everyone in the room was crying, well, except the guys. And then I remember you turning to me saying, "Huh. You just don't understand, do you?" But she was up there crying too, you know. And that was a phenomenal night. That with Celeste Holm that night and her husband, you know, just a phenomenal night.
And of course we lost Dick Clark. And you know, this New Year's is going to be kind of bittersweet without Dick Clark. And that's always a sad thing. But we are running out of time.
Okay, can I just throw in one quick thing about the end of the year? I'm old enough to remember Guy Lombardo doing the end of New Year's. And when Guy Lombardo died, he says, "I'm taking New Year's with me." Well, thank God we have Dick Clark for the last 30 years. So let's see who's going to be the next
Ryan
Guy Lombardo.
Now, which is not quite the same.
He's no Guy Lombardo.
Yeah. But I'm sorry?
Can we end on a happy note now that we've depressed your audience?
Go ahead.
Just want to say congratulations. Last time I talked to you, you were a mere podcast. Now you are 1 year anniversary, and you are the Woman of the Year podcast for Best Talk Radio. So congratulations.
It's that Best Radio Show of the Year. So thank you. Thank you. Best Web Radio Show of the Year. Thank you, Cinema Dave. And yes, that was probably the thrill of my year, getting the award, and it's been a good year. But I thank everybody for listening all year long, and I hope that people will continue to listen in. And once again, directors out there, if you want to be part of the show, you can always email me at ravenprods, ravenprods @yahoo.com. Anything last words, Cinema Dave? You want to give a website out about your book?
Yep. If you want to find my book, The Adventures of Cinema Dave in the Florida Motion Picture World, you can find it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. So give us a look. And also, I will have on New Year's Eve my top 10 list, honorable mentions and class acts. They will be on my journal, cinemadave.livejournal.com, New Year's Eve.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for talking with us today, Cinema Dave, and I will catch you later.
All right. I had a blast. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Happy New Year.
Okay, well, that was Cinema Dave. We actually talked a lot more than I thought we were going to talk. We had a lot to say, a lot more than I thought to talk about this year. In fact, I have a bunch of notes of things that I wanted to go into that we ran out of time for. But some of the people that we lost this year is quite a long list, unfortunately. But You know, it was a good year overall. There were some great films, and if anybody missed some of the films that came out this year, of course, are going to be on DVD, so keep an eye out for those. And there's some films coming out next year that we're all going to be looking forward to as well. But I will be back next week, guys. I will be interviewing Troy Bernier and Eric Swain, who have been, well, Troy's been on the show a couple times before. This is the first time I finally get Eric to come on the show. And they're going to be talking about their new film, Temple of Joy, and also, of course, anything that's going on with the Planet X world. If you've missed any of the interviews I've done with Troy in the past, you can go back and listen to them. And we'll tune in next week at 1 o'clock, same time, same channel. And I look forward to another year talking to you about film and interviewing some great filmmakers. And I guess I'll talk to you guys next week. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.